tremendous track, but we are going to fade it down. Now, I am pleased to be joined on the line by Jean-Paul Bluey Monique. He's a music icon, and he's a guitarist, composer, a record producer, and he's known across the globe, leader of Incognito and Citrus Sun. His band Incognito were at the forefront of the UK acid jazz explosion. Now, he's worked with the likes of Justin Brown, Mario Bondi, Chaka Khan, George Benson, George Duke, Mesa, Stevie Wonder, and that is to name but a few. His awesome track, You Are The One, I've been playing that on my show for the last 2 weeks, and it's taken from his solo album, which is due out in June, which is called Tinted Sky. So are you there, Bluey?
I'm here. Am I clear?
You are clear. Well, that was a good introduction I gave you there, I feel.
Well, it's funny that you should have actually been not only the introduction, but the fact that you were playing California Soul before, because I've just recorded that with Citrus Sun, and that's coming out on an album in a month or two.
No way. So, it's a fantastic song, isn't it?
Yeah. But thank you for the lovely introduction and for your support of this new album.
Brilliant. It's lovely to talk to you. I haven't spoken to you for ages.
Yeah, most importantly is our friendship goes back so far, you know. Yeah. People don't know, but you know, it's like, so for me, it's a joy speaking with you at this time. Are you okay? Your family fine?
Yeah, everything's fine. Lockdown. That is. How are you coping with that? You're a musician, so you're used to being in the studio working. Has it been for you?
I've embraced it as something of a positive. You know, we don't spend this kind of quality time with the people we live with. Sometimes we're just passing ships in the night, you know, and sometimes passing ships, you know, like not too often either, you know. Sometimes we're away from home for like several months on tour.
Yeah.
So spending this kind of time has been a positive thing for me. I've done loads of sessions, loads of writing, working on about 7 or 8 albums at the moment.
Yeah.
In the various people. I'm not saying the entire album, but I'm contributing. And so it's a busy time, and also for me to be active in what I can do, so in my social environment, and taking care of local people who need to be taken care of with a phone call, people who are alone, and so yeah, just doing what most people are doing for the betterment of our society whilst this is happening.
Your track Make You Mine, which I just played just before we spoke, it's got a really early kind of jazz funk feel to it, and it's got some great harmonies, and I love the retro keyboards. So tell us about how that track came about.
Well, the whole album is a wonderful musician producer called Richard Bull, who has done many tracks with me with Incognito, and we're like, this is something that's kind of a bit of fun for us, you know. Getting together and writing songs is not a chore. It's something we do because I've got an idea. Let's do this. Let's do that. We break bread together, and we make great music. I feel together. You know, it's like it's up to the listeners to decide whether it's great or not. But for me, it's what I would term for my own self an opportunity to be able to do something which is a breakaway from Incognito, because there's just two of us. With Incognito, you have to take into consideration so many other people. Mm. So for me, it's a bit of fun because we do a track in a day. You know, we write, we record, we you know, and then it takes a day to mix. So every track takes 2 days. Mm. So it's a lot of fun because you see an end result quicker.
Before we talk a little bit more about the tracks on the album, how old were you when you actually picked up the guitar and started playing?
Five years old. Well, 5 years old when I started to, when I fell in love with music and I started to play with toy guitars, but I didn't actually get a real guitar till I was about 11. Mm. But I played on various toy guitars, or anybody who had a guitar lying around, I would somehow find my way to making a little tune on it. I was singing, dancing, and playing whatever was in the kitchen, you know, pans, pots, and I was making money with it since I was about 8 years old.
Mm. And what did you grow up listening to? Who were your earliest influences?
Well, when I was growing up in Mauritius, you know, you were listening to people like Cliff Richard, Elvis Presley, Beatles, The Shadows.
Mm.
You know, there was no soul music being played on the radio. And then I came to England and I found the Motown, and my teacher at school saw my absolute love for music up and had me perform at in assembly, and gave me my introduction to my first real soul record. Although I had seen Little Stevie Wonder on the telly and thought, wow, you know, that rhythm is just amazing.
Yeah.
But the first soul tune I ever played was Through the Grapevine, you know, and I jammed that with my teacher after school.
Yeah.
We had little jam sessions.
Do you remember the first time you heard your song on the radio, and what track was it?
Yeah. There were two moments like this, but I say two because one was Light of the World before Incognito, and the next one's an Incognito track, and they both were relevant, and they both felt like I was hearing myself for the first time. Yeah. With Light of the World, it was an absolute first time. We had a track called Swinging from the first Light of the World album, and it was just a strange feeling hearing yourself on the radio, and I happened to be alone. And in those days, there was no mobile phones or anything, and you know, I was trying to find a call box to let everybody know it was on the radio.
Yeah.
And I only had, like, just enough in my pocket to make two calls.
Mm.
And I called one of the guys in the band, and he was already listening to it. So that was a wasted call. And the other one was to a family member, and they didn't really take a blind bit of notice about it, and I felt really like I wanted to tell the world, but I couldn't reach out to people. I was looking at people, you know, while I was listening to it from my window and thinking, I'm on a radio. I wish I could go outside and tell you, you know, right now. But I was indoors, and we never had a phone in my flat, so you know, I ran out to the call box to make those calls, and had to leave the radio to do it. It felt really weird because I wanted to listen to it, but at the same time I wanted to tell people that it was being played.
The new solo album Tinted Sky has 11 tracks, which is what we call a proper album, because we're so used to hearing EPs, which is all well and good to get maybe a new artist out there. But what journey are people going to get with this album? Tell us a little bit about the feel of the album and some of the tracks.
Well, the whole album is, with me when I write, it's what I wake up on that day and the mood that I'm in, and the subject matters that are affecting me on any particular day. And whilst making that record, I went from going down memory lane, you know, as you do when you're writing songs, because love is a strong emotion, and any experiences you've had of it keeps feeding you songs, you know, way after that initial experience, you know, way after the love is gone. You know, it's like the love is still there as far as you're concerned as a songwriter, because you can tap into that emotion, which is why it's really hard for me to kind of see relationships or feel a relationship that is somebody or one of you feels is not mendable. You know, it's like it saddens me because it stays with me. And as a songwriter, I lock it in my mind as an emotion that is should be shared with myself and others constantly. So there are love songs, and also during that period there was a knife crime spate that was going on in London that I felt prompted to address, because I had an angle of looking at it as a social worker, because that's what I am. I'm a social worker. I'm not just a songwriter. I work with a lot of my fans that need the help. People who've embraced my music that come to me after shows, and we talk and we remain friends.
Yeah.
And you know, I help them with whatever situation I can help them with. And as such, I have a friend who actually was directly involved with a family that where they lost a child in a knife crime. I myself was stabbed when I was younger in the streets of London. So I felt I had something to say because I had an understanding of it from various angles. And any call to awareness to parents or to possibly... I doubt whether the kind of people that are committing knife crimes is listening to a Bluey album, but you need to put that out in the world because you may wake up somebody's sensibility to the situation.
Yeah.
You know, a teacher, a parent, you know, someone.
Yeah.
And also you, as a songwriter, you need to expose your emotions about these things because, you know, as songwriters, sometimes we just do that for ourselves. It's therapy for us. Also on this record are my future visions, you know, my playful visions, my wit, my love of my just sheer joy of music, playing a little bit more guitar than usual, being able to be allowed to be to just sing, you know, to. You know, it's in Incognito. There's so many singers that I always put myself at the back of the queue. But I always felt that, you know, I've been encouraged many times in my life about doing some singing myself.
Mm.
And as a songwriter, I always felt that I'm writing for other people, that my voice is just for demoing. And some people may still feel that is the case, but I was told, you know, a few times by various people, and like Al Jarreau, when I co-wrote a song for Mario Biondi and for him with Richard Bull, I wrote that. And when I met with Al Jarreau, he listened to the demo and he said, "Who's that singing on the demo?" You know, and I was like, just trying to hide.
I thought you'd go, me, it's me singing. Put your hand up, yeah. Get in there straight away with Al. Oh, what, he's a tremendous, tremendous artist. And that's amazing to get that kind of that feedback.
Yeah, and he actually said, you must record your voice and you must let the public hear you. And I thought, if Al Jarreau is saying that, you know, any little doubt that I'm having every time I record my voice, I should just put it to one side because it's, you know, my band is very supportive in that sense. You know, they always say, "Oh man, love your harmony here," or you know, "You should sing this," you know, and I'm always thinking, no. But when I'm doing this with Richard, it's such an easy and personal, you know, because everything in music is. Chemistry, you know, when you're working with other people, the chemistry has to be right, you know, and with Richard I've got such a beautiful relationship, you know. I can't imagine having that relationship that strong with another songwriter.
Yeah.
You know, although I'm surrounded by a lot of good songwriters and you know, and I get a lot of results with people like Matt Cooper, Graham Harvey, with Mesa, but working with Richard Bull, I have developed something, you know, as far as especially with my solo recording, something which I want to hold on to, you know, for as long as I can.
When you do the songwriting process, is it different every time when you sit down? Do you sometimes write lyrics in the middle of the night, or do you do a guitar riff and get to, or the piano, or is it literally every time it's something different?
Every time it is something different, but most of the time it's because I have an idea. The idea is complete. When you approach it from, like, I'm going to write a song now, and you start to tinkle around, there's all the time, because if you're musical and you embrace the emotion of music, you'll find a way of putting out on paper and on tape or, you know, on digital recording, whatever you're doing.
Mm.
But for me, most of the time, it starts off with an idea, a word, you know, that I expand. And when I find a sentence or a word that actually triggers off a whole train of thought of emotions and a story, I write a story around it quickly on a piece of paper. I sketch out a story. that way my tunes will always have a beginning, a middle, and an end that is interesting because it is a story.
Yeah.
But what's written on that piece of paper is for the spoken word. It's not for the singing. Then you kind of start tailoring it. But if I just start from just trying to sing something without thinking of an entire story content, I find myself just trying to match words with words and trying to rhyme, you know.
Yeah.
But music is not really, it can be poetic, but it's not poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel, you know, and I like music that is storytelling.
Yeah.
Rather than poetry.
Yeah.
And elements of poetry are in there because, you know, we rhyme, we find the tempo. There is tempo in what we do. There is no set ways.
Mm.
I mean, some of my songwriting, some of the best songs I've written is because I have a whole story. Deep Waters, and when I wrote that for Mesa, my biggest success as a songwriter is Deep Waters, because the amount of records that sold in America, because people identified with it.
Yeah.
But the story was already there. Mesa was living it in front of my eyes. And I wrote a letter to her, to Warner, about what was going on, because I was an observer.
Mm.
Then at the last minute decided, no, I'm going to hold back the letter and write the song from this letter. So because the letter had a story already, and it had meaning and it had purpose, it gave the singer, one, a story to sing, two, their own story, three, a soundtrack to their story. So they were suddenly lost inside this, you know, they become lost inside the emotion, and they perform probably better than ever when a singer can connect with the song, because it's actually something they live through, and most singers can. But sometimes I can actually hear a singer singing a song that they have actually no understanding of, because I'm not feeling the emotion of the lyrics at all.
When I spoke to you a couple of years ago, you said that you write about 300 songs a year. So is it possible for you to pick out a top three of your favourite? I would say Deep Waters, is that one of them?
Well, Deep Waters has to be one of them, because you know, when you play that live in America, like the audience is supercharged. Sometimes you've got, like, you know, anything between 250 2,500 to 5,000 people in the place.
Yeah.
And sometimes up to 10,000 if you're playing festivals and you know, and beyond that.
Yeah.
And in America, 90% of that audience are there to listen to Deep Waters.
Mm.
And to have a song like that connects with so many people, and to you know, the show is the show, they're loving it, you know, it's like, you know, the percussion solos, the drum solos, is like still going to get standing ovation.
Yeah.
You know, we're still going to get big shouts of emotion when we play Always There, you know. But in America, you're going to get that thing for Deep Waters that rarely do people get a chance, songwriters get a chance to feel the audience love for a song.
Mm.
And that whole sing along and tears and rocking back and forth with their eyes closed, you know.
Yeah.
It's like that is very special for me in that sense. But Still a Friend of Mine also is a song that is probably, especially in Asia, it's probably the most covered song. It is the most covered song we've ever done, and it's like I could go, you know, when I got somewhere like Indonesia or Japan, I could go and I could hear that about 5-6 times in a day.
Yes.
Just going through the day, because it's being played on the radio.
Yeah.
It's being played by some band in karaoke. It's being played in a mall, you know. I was in a mall in Jakarta, and I heard Still a Friend of Mine, and I turned around to my friend I was having lunch with in the dining area.
Mm.
And I said, "Oh, look, they're playing Still a Friend of Mine. The DJ's playing Still a Friend of Mine." And he said, "That's not a DJ, that's a live band playing downstairs." I said, "No, man, that's my record. I know my record, you know, it's like I produced it, you know." And he said, "No, that is a band playing downstairs."
Yeah. Wow.
And I stopped eating. I said, "I've got to see this, you know." Mm. You're kidding me. And as I went downstairs, I could hear the echoes of, and certain elements of a live band, and I began to get a chill because it was still a perfect rendition. You know, everything that was on the record was being replicated.
Yep.
And it sounded really, really good. And it's only when I turned the corner and saw the band that I truly believe what was going on. Mm. And then they spotted me, and they stopped playing. And they came running up to me and said, "You're Bluey. You write this song. This is Incognito." You're, yeah. You know, and they were a band, a Filipino band that were playing that were doing the club circuit in Indonesia for 6 months, and their main repertoire was Incognito.
Wow. Oh, that's just bizarre, isn't it, as well? I've got a question, actually, from Dee Hepburn. I think you met Dee a few years ago, but she said, "I saw Incognito at Ronnie Scott's a few years back, and the band are really tight," which they are. "The band had no counting. How do they do it?" is her question to you.
I don't know. Most of our songs, we do have counting. It's just like we look at the drummer, and sometimes he's just nodding his head, you know, or we get a little kind of hi-hat feel. Sometimes we know a tempo just from an intro feel or a keyboard part that kicks in. And sometimes we can just kind of like look at each other and go, you know, there are signals, you know, and sometimes they're heard and sometimes they're not heard. But there are signals. We would be telepathic if that was not the case. But there are signals. But we have developed a sense of understanding each other and where to come in. But there's always something which triggers off how we begin a song.
Now, a question from drummer Michael Connolly. He said, "Hi, Bluey. I recently put Positivity on my Facebook top 10 album list that everyone's been doing lately. Love that record. My question is, did you have drum loops in place when writing the tunes, or did you work through with Richard Bailey, Randy Hope Taylor, and experiment with different feels and grooves, or a mixture of both approaches?"
Some of the songs, a lot of the songs are Richard Bailey, but a lot of the songs are Richard Bull. A lot of people don't realize, you know, that, you know, there are the biggest music institutions in the United States on their jazz and funk courses have a tune called Colibri. Now, most people think that's Randy Hope Taylor on bass and Richard Bailey on drums. Mm. It's the programming of Richard Bull. And a lot of that programming was those songs were pre-programmed by Richard Bull anyway. And then Richard Bailey played them, but the approach of Richard Bull is that he studies Richard Bailey, so it's very organic. And when Richard plays Richard Bailey or Richard Bull play the drums, it's something which is feels natural and has a good feel to me. How it's achieved as a producer, I don't really care, as long as it feels really good and the song is carried by that, because the drum groove and the bass are fundamental, you know, to our music, you know.
Yeah.
And we've had about 1,500 plus musicians, definitely more than 1,500, that has actually joined the band at some stage, even if it's like a one show or a tour. You know, so we play with a lot of musicians, and there's been a lot of different drummers. The drumming on that record, both from Richard Bailey and Richard Bull, stands out, and the songs are built on those grooves. They're ideas that I had that were complete as songs, but when it came production time, they really had to the groove really dictated not just the tempo of the song, but the tempo of the lyrics.
So the album's called Tinted Sky. How did you come up? I love the artwork, by the way. It's really lovely, the artwork on the front. It's really good. I've had a look at his website as well, the designer who did that. You can give him a shout out. But it's called Tinted Sky. How did you get the name?
It came from the actual photograph that I decided to use on the album cover. I was taking photos with a friend of mine, Marcel, who lives in Holland, that come over and to take photos of me on around along the River Thames, you know, it's like we were walking across different bridges, including Chelsea Bridge, which, you know, which is beautiful. As we were taking pictures, I was changing my look by putting on different glasses, sunglasses and stuff that I had, because, yeah, you know, you carry a little bit just to try and get different kind of photos from the shoot. And the shot that I chose that he'd taken to give to Mitchie Boy, who does the artwork for most of my stuff, Incognito and my solo stuff. He's worked on all my solo albums so far, the last two and this one. And he actually spotted that and actually brought that, you know, that the fact that I was wearing these yellow glasses, and it's kind of made the sky look different as opposed to the rest of the photograph. It tinted the sky, and I liked the look of it, and I thought, and I said, oh look, it's a lovely tint on those in that photograph where my glasses are. It immediately gave me the idea, tinted sky.
I love it. I looked and I went, ooh, that's what can I nick from that, is what I thought when I saw the cover. Now, there are 11 tracks on the album. Tinted Sky is going to be released in June. Is it the 22nd of June? For the whole album? Might be the 2nd. I might have got myself confused. It's definitely June.
I am terrible because I should know this. But you can re-announce it, and it is. Oh, I wish I knew. I don't have it in front of me.
I think it is it's either the 2nd or the 22nd. But I will put it up on the website with the details. So that will be out there. The track I'm going to end the interview with. I could talk to you all day. I know I've got loads of musicians out there. Absolutely, you know, you have so many musicians that absolutely love all the music that you do, and there are so many that have got in contact with me today. So, oh, Bluey's on. That's fantastic. So well respected, and it's the 12th of June, David said, so there we go. Stick that in. The 12th of June, the album will be out.
Thank you, David.
So that's Tinted Sky. It'll be out on the 12th of June. That's Bluey's solo album. You can find Bluey at bluey.solo on Facebook, and you'll be able to get all the details there. Or you can go and have a look at Splash Blue Music, and you can see Bluey and a list of other artists that are there as well. So I'm going to finish the interview. This is the one I've been playing since I got sent the track. I love it. It's called You Are the One. Tell us about this. Yeah, I'm going to play it now.
We to play it before we talk about my new single. We Are the One. What about your singing? You've got an amazing voice, and I hope you play your stuff on your radio show. And we've got to do something together. You know, it is something we must do, because as friends, we've known each other for a long time, but we've never really collaborated on anything. You know, you've got an amazing voice, and it's so underrated.
Thank you.
And you sent me a song recently to listen to, and I wrote back to you. It was just a beautiful piece of music, but your voice is really, really, it's perfect for that song.
Oh.
And it's perfect most of the time. So it's to listen to. It's just a joy to listen to your voice. So I look forward to doing something together with you.
Thank you. Do you know what? You brought tears to my... You brought tears to my eyes now? That's like a... Wow. If I, you remember... my mum passed away in November. You remember my mate? I wish she loved you. Yeah. So I think my mum and dad, wherever they are, they'll be going, yes, yes. Thank you.
I'm sorry for your loss, but I know that you had a deep love for your... You have a deep love for your mother. And the thing is, when you have deep love for somebody, it means that you had a good life with them.
Yes,
you
know, definitely. Their own happy memories.
That is celebrated. Also, I like the fact that I'm working with your family.
Yes, my niece, Abby.
With your niece, Abby, and we're working on her record, which also comes out on the same label.
That's Courage soon. Coming out. And Abby, people would have known, I've talked about Abby before, she's a great singer-songwriter from down in Brighton, and she's been through a lot. I'll go through when I, you know, but she's been through a lot with cancer treatment. I have played out music from Abby before, and she's got a great song called Courage, the video. I've seen a tiny bit of it, and that's going to be being released soon as well, which is on Splash Blue. But you've got you've got some fantastic artists out there as well on Splash Blue, so people need to have a look. And also, but as I always say, buy your music. If you like a song, it doesn't matter if somebody signed to a record label or they've actually paid out all the money themselves, buy your music, 99 pence.
Thank you very much for that.
Get your single, but it's important, isn't it?
I find it hard to say that myself, but it is the truth. I mean, yeah. Right now, I'm feeling that truth harder than ever, because as a songwriter, I have a catalogue, and I've been able to kind of still earn a little bit from my songwriting whilst we're not touring. Mm. But, you know, I feel so much for so many musicians who are not making anything, yep, at the moment.
Yeah.
And when you buy a record, you allow them to eat and to live, because right now, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah.
But streaming is a wonderful thing, because it still brings revenue and it's a great advertising space. The basic living of most songwriters, musicians, and the whole music industry comes from actually people purchasing,
yeah,
a piece of music, and when they do, it helps us to make more music.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
So if you want more music, support it.
Yeah, thank exactly. You. Buy it. Right, I'm going to have to. Now, I've got my next presenter. He's literally scratching at the door trying to get. Well, he can't come in yet because we're on lockdown. But it's been great to speak to you. Lovely to speak to you. Thank you very much for David and to Jules as well for setting up the interview. And Abby's original material will be out on the 10th of July. Yours is on the 10th of June. Tinted Sky. So here is the track. You Are the One. You're a star, Bluey. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you, darling.
Take care, lovely. All right, bye. Bye.
Midnight.